This is Jazz Discoveries on listener-supported Jazz on 2. I'm your host, Robert Bullington.
Thank you.
you just heard I Mean You, and it was led by a wonderful group of young dynamic musicians who've come into the studio for a live session and conversation. This is Jazz Discoveries. I'm your host, Robert Bullington, and we have with us at the piano Michael Burnaby.
Thank you.
At the guitar, John Morrison. Bass, David Bamber. Drums, Kyle Gupstadt. And on sax, Dave Pollock. Welcome, guys. Michael, introduce your group for us a bit.
I pulled a bunch of guys together, and these are all guys that I've played with in different situations, in many different venues. Me and John, we went to undergrad together at Duquesne University in Pittsburgh, and somehow we ended up both doing our grad studies at Rutgers. Most of these people we've met through, most of the rest of the band members you've seen here, we met just through school, through playing different gigs in New Brunswick. Me, John, and Dave Pollock on sax, we play with a drummer from Rutgers. We played it a bunch of times in Philly, New York. Dave is the newest person, you could say. He's from Temple, and seen him at different sessions in New Brunswick and other and played with him on other gigs. And Kyle's also another Rutgers guy who we've played with many times, and he's the guys I like to play with. So
awesome.
I figured I'd get them together.
So that tune that you just opened with, I Mean You, that might not be something familiar to all of our listeners.
It's a Thelonious Monk tune, one of his popular ones, and two different keys that the song is in. It starts in E-flat, and all of a sudden you're in F, F dominant 7. And, it's kind of one of those tunes that we would call on any, even a background kind of music gig. At least for us, it's one of those fun kind of swing tunes that we like to play, and so I figured it'd be a good opener for this.
Excellent opener. Okay, well, you ready to launch into another one?
Absolutely. This next one is one of my favorite, probably my favorite composer in jazz, Wayne Shorter. This song is off of Miles Davis's Nefertiti album. This is called Fall. Now, usually it's done in a more very abstract, almost pseudo kind of waltz type of feel, but we're gonna do it more in a modern kind of neo soul kind of way. So we'll see how we do.
All right, this is Fall. Take it away, guys.
One, two, and one, two, three, four. Thank you. Wow, thank you guys. That was Fall by Wayne Shorter. And this is with Michael Burnaby and friends here in the studios of Front Row Seat Productions, where we're recording this edition of Jazz Discoveries for you, our listeners. Everything is live. The conversation is live. We're just here in the studio having a nice time and having some wonderful conversation. I know Michael better than the rest of you guys, I think, but what I'm getting to know about all of you, you're doing things. You're performing, but you're doing other things in the community. You're teaching. You're pursuing great activities. Do you want to tell our listeners, and any of you guys want to tell our listeners about what you're doing in the community? Dave, I know you're teaching, because we were talking about some students that I've worked with that you've taught.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm big into the education side of things, as well as the performing side of things. I think it's good to show the students that not only do I want to just teach them how to play and teach them from a book and show them some theoretical knowledge of things, but also show them that I actually perform and that I can do the things I'm talking about. I'm not just kind of, you know, talking from a book. So along with all the performing things I do teach private lessons. I teach at a public school. I work at jazz camps. I do all sorts of different educational opportunities for students all the way from ages 9 through high school and even a little bit into college as well. And I've done that for since I was in college. I started teaching a big band at a high school, and it just grew up from there, from running a jazz program at a private high school now to public school, like I said, and everything else.
That's wonderful. I mean, and I think that many of our listeners know this, but we can't say it enough, that we're just blessed with so many incredibly talented young middle school, high school age musicians in the area, and you guys get the privilege of working with them. So thank you for all you're doing in the community.
You're welcome.
And thank you for sharing your gifts with us tonight. Anybody else?
What a shy bunch.
More than all of us.
Strong silent types. Your musicianship speaks for itself. What's next?
Next is one of Wayne Shorter's best friends. Probably his best friend is a Herbie Hancock tune. This will be Dolphin Dance. This is one of my favorite tunes. I think it's a great tune. It's a classic. We consider it a standard, I guess, in our repertoire. It's something. It's one of the tunes that, you know, we learn when we're in school, and it's a tune that we play on gigs as well too. We'll play it at a background gig, you know, if we feel like it. It's a popular tune to call at, I guess, hip jam sessions, if there was one. So this is Herbie Hancock's tune, Dolphin Dance.
Anybody featured in this one?
This will be featuring Dave, John, and myself.
Excellent.
In that order.
All right.
All right.
Here we go with Dolphin Dance. Take it away.
Yeah. One, a two, a one, two, a one. Thank you.
Awesome. That was Dolphin Dance by, do I have it right, guys? Miles Davis?
Herbie Hancock.
Herbie Hancock, sorry.
I don't know if Dolphin Miles Dance ever played
by this Herbie Hancock. So,
I don't know if we could.
So guys, tell me, how is what you're playing today the same or different than what you were studying in school? Because none of you guys are that far out of graduate studies, or, you know, what drives your decision to pick the repertoire that you play, the tunes that you cover?
At least for me, when I was at Duquesne in Pittsburgh, I didn't learn to play jazz until I was about, I was probably in mid high school, and I didn't really start learning it or get serious about studying it in college until I got to college. When you're first starting to learn jazz, you're learning all the old tunes, you're learning all the standards, the standard repertoire. Not, this is a kind of tune that you would probably learn in your maybe second or third year, in some schools, even in senior year. But I would say that one of the biggest influences was, for both John and I, was our teacher at the time was Sean Jones, who's, you know, one of the top trumpeter players in the world now. And it was through his music, especially, that I heard, you know, at the ripe age of, you know, whatever I was, 18 years old, learning these old standards, but listening to his music at the same time, and it kind of fused those influences together, and I started I already started looking into Wayne Shorter and Herbie Hancock music and Miles Davis music of the 60s with actually Herbie and Wayne in the same band, and a lot of that old type of music, and actually living with John too and listening to a lot of Branford Marsalis or Ornette Coleman together and really getting turned on to that stuff. I could say that maybe for me personally, wasn't as fun for me learning those old standards because I wanted to learn all the really cool stuff and I didn't really know how to play that stuff at first. But just the point being that since the beginning, these type of tunes and these more modern sorts of standards have been something that have, you know, for me, been my bread and butter, I would say, and stuff that I'd constantly listen to and look towards as an influence in writing myself, especially Wayne Shorter music. That's kind of been a big part of my journey is this kind of music.
It's something you said piqued my attention too, Michael. You said that you alluded to the fact that you started studying music before you started studying jazz.
Absolutely. I started playing piano when I was 6 years old. I was playing Suzuki and doing that intensive ear training at a very young age. I sang in choirs. I sang in the American Boy Choir. Rest their souls. You know, they no longer in business. But
it's great that actually now the Princeton Girl Choir
absolutely
has branched off, and now there's the Princeton Boy Choir.
Absolutely,
and
yes.
There is an organization to fill that to
fill that gap.
Somewhat fill that gap now. Yeah.
Yes, but you know, just being at that age, being 12 years old, and having the opportunity to, you know, sing with the New York Philharmonic and sing in Carnegie Hall and Lincoln Center and in Japan and around the world and all these different places, and doing that as a 12-year-old, propelled me, I think, through high school and eventually into college. But, you know, I was mostly doing classical music and choral music up until, you know, mid-high school, and really didn't stop doing that stuff altogether until I got to college. So music, at least for me personally, has been a long journey. And I would say the same for most of these guys, too. Anybody else?
Just your journey, your journey towards what you're playing now. where did you start off studying as a young one? And yeah.
I mean, I'm similar to Michael in the sense that I started playing piano when I was like 6 years old, and I'm from Ewing Township, so the public school at the time and still right now, they're very serious about their music education.
This is David Bamber, everybody. And this is you could pick a worse state to grow up in, I think.
Oh yeah, I had you know, excellent exposure to music and really positive instructors.
At least for our education too. Being right in the middle of Philly and New York has been the best thing I think.
It's a good place to be.
Possible. Sorry, go ahead.
Blessed to be here. Yeah.
But I'm similar to Mike in the sense that I've done everything but jazz to get to jazz. So I've had some important musicians around me when I was younger. James McBride, he's an author. He wrote The Color of Water, but he's also an excellent saxophone player. Clifford Adams, he passed away a couple years ago, but he was a trombone player.
Played with Kool & the Gang, right?
Kool & the Gang, yeah. That was his main thing. But he was an excellent jazz artist, so he used to play at Trent and Candlelight. He lived right around the corner from me. Tommy Grice,
rest his soul too. Mm-hmm. Tommy's his soul, giant, yeah.
Oh yeah, so Tommy Grice lived Mr. Grice lived right. I could walk behind my house and go on the trail and be in his backyard.
Wow.
So I had some excellent guys who taught me things. I took piano lessons. I started playing bass in high school, and I wasn't your typical jazz kid. You know, you start playing, you get serious in high school, and then you go to Juilliard, or the new school, or whatever. So I was into anime. I played sports. I started on electric bass. I didn't get into upright until I was a sophomore in high school, and until then I had been playing cello through middle school along with piano. And I just decided I wanted to play bass because at the time I was the only boy in the cello section, and I thought that was a problem. So my dad was happy because my dad is a jazz head, so he had all the records playing. So I wasn't jumping by the time I had my foundation on cello. My orchestra and the marching band conductor, he was a bassist, so he taught me some things. And by that point, I was kind of ready for college. So I did my undergrad at Howard, and that's in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was blessed to have a city where they're really friendly to young musicians. I was the only kid studying jazz bass for most of my time at Howard. So I had the opportunity to play a lot of gigs that I shouldn't have played. But the main thing in terms of getting to jazz... These older tunes are important. So something like the Monk tune we played, Monk's career, let's say the golden years, were in late 50s. So something like that, even though it's kind of abstract, it actually, I think an important part of any set or any gig, you're gonna have a set list that's tailored towards your taste or whatever music you wanna promote. But also, there's just a historical aspect of it. So, because I believe that jazz musicians were historians as well as artists. So that's why in this set, we're kind of doing some of like the neo-soul vibe, or we're doing some Dolphin Dance is a couple years later than Monk. So, I mean, there's a different vibe to that, too. So right. It's kind of, you cover different time periods and... you try and make it interesting by having the youth of, or the age or wisdom of whoever's playing the music. And that's pretty much all I have to say. I think
yeah, that's great, David. Thank you. Thank you. And you know, to all of you who are supporting music education in this state, you know, you're enjoying the results here. You're hearing musicians who benefited from all the people that are dedicated to education in New Jersey. And it's great to have you guys here, to have you're not so far out of school that you're an example of what's been doing in this state to nurture young musicians. So thank you for being here. So what's up next?
We're gonna do a trio tune called Soul Eyes. This is a tune by Mal Waldron, but was made really famous by John Coltrane. It's my arrangement of it. You'll hear parts of the melody, and you'll hear what sounds like the actual tune, and you know, it's got a couple different vibes to this song. So
here we go. Soul Eyes, take it away, guys.